Yes, Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. This is the coolest song. I love it. Kristen Decker is with me tonight, and this has not happened in 2 years.
Good morning.
Good morning. I think the last time I worked with you was on a Thanksgiving-ish shift. That's what I think. So this is very exciting for me and for
good
the
way
listeners.
To start out the new year.
Yeah, it is. Another good way to start out the new year is that song, which I love. It's Shakira. It's actually from Zootopia, which is a little random because it's a Disney movie, but Disney Pixar. But I love the message. I want to try everything. I want to try even though I could fail. And this is one of the things we're going to talk about at 3:30. But phone line and text line already open. You can text in what song gets you motivated, gets you pumped up, pulls you out of the doldrums. What's your jam? I want to know what that is. I asked this question. I posed this question to a group of like-minded ladies, let's say, on a Facebook page that I'm a part of. I got some really, really great responses. Of course, one of the ones, Beyonce. Pretty much anything Beyonce is great.
Ultimate girl power.
Ultimate girl power. Try Everything is great. And Try Everything is a really neat song from the perspective of a parent, because it's really something I'd like my kids to think. Like, yeah, I could fail and it could really suck and I'm still going to do it. This is something we gotta make choices and take chances and grow. It's all about growth. So whatever your song is that really gets you into your groove, let me know. 312-981-7200. You can call those in. Kristen will be answering the phones. Hair Queen Kristen Decker. And then you can also text those in. 312-981-7200 is also our text line. Hey, Kristen Decker, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Did you watch any of the coverage?
Oh, did I? And then today, all the highlights of the other channels that I missed.
I think highlights is being very generous.
They were highlights of laughter.
Oh, boy. There were so many things that got weird last night. I don't even... It is actually being considered semi-intentional for ratings. That's something that's there. It's so bad, they think there's no way that could have happened on accident. And it wasn't just one station.
No, it was pretty across the board.
It was pretty across the board. So starting at 3 o'clock, we are going to talk about the New Year's Eves that shouldn't have been on broadcasting or in broadcasting or by broadcasters. And I want to know from your opinion if you would have let much of this continue if you had been producing those broadcasts.
I'll save it for three.
3 o'clock. That's what we're going to be talking about at 3 o'clock. Starting in just a few minutes, my good friend Johnny Olesinski, you can follow him on Twitter at JohnnyOMG. He is going to be joining us, former Chicago Tribune theater writer. Now he is an entertainment writer and columnist for the New York Post. And boy, did he have a good one today, which was actually yesterday. So the Sunday New York Post, the title was "Social Media Users Have Hijacked Celebrity Deaths for Self-Glorification." That's going to come up right after these messages on WGN. Hannah Stanley filling in. More after this. Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. He will be back with you tomorrow at 2 a.m. And the man of the hour who is on with me right now is Johnny Olesinski. You know him from Chicago Tribune as a theater writer. And now he is with the New York Post. And you can follow him at Twitter at JohnnyOMG. And I always say that because I'm the one who found that address for him. That was my handle. Hi, Johnny. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And I begin this new year by being very depressing.
Well, here. Sort of.
So my column today is all about mainstream celebrity deaths and how the likes of you and me ruin them.
It's not necessarily the likes of you and I, because we are journalistically focused, and I try to take an extra 30 seconds before I tweet something silly. But a lot of the social media users, this is an interesting article to me, and if people are looking for it online, I will post it on my Facebook page, which is, you can find it at That Hannah Stanley, which is my Facebook page. But the title of it is Social Media Users Have Hijacked Celebrity Deaths for Self-Glorification. Tell me, that's very wordy, Johnny, for a Sunday, for a Sunday column.
Yeah, I write the headlines.
I know. I know. I wish you did. Some of them are so good. But we have had, this has been an inordinately high amount of celebrity deaths, which we do not need to beat into the ground any more than everybody else has. However, because of the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, the everything, it really is inaccurate sometimes what people are posting, and they're really sort of beating other people up about how they're grieving and why they're not doing it appropriately per whatever standard. Whose standard is it? It's their own. They're making it up and everybody's glomming on.
Right. So part of what, so because there were so many celebrity deaths, right, Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds, George Michael, it sort of put a magnifying glass on what the problem is. And what got me thinking about it for the column was I had a lot of friends when Carrie Fisher died who were posting things like, I think we're all watching Star Wars tonight, you know, kind of these shallow examinations. And then a day later, so that was what they were doing to process their grief. But then a day later, what Debbie Reynolds was doing to process the grief at her daughter dying was dying herself.
Right.
You know, the grief became so much for this mom that she, you know, at, already in frail health, admittedly, but she actually died, her, you know, and that made me think, okay, wow, us us the fans making this all about ourselves is really a selfish thing. And we do it. We've been doing it all the time and in an almost obsessive way.
Right. You almost feel like you're ahead of the curve if you were the first one to figure out a celebrity died, right? You happened to be on Yahoo when it hit or whatever. I was up very, very late the night that it was announced that David Bowie died. And then I, in the opposite mindset, I started freaking out thinking it was a hoax. Because that's what I'm so used to death hoaxes that I started trying to source it and figure out if it was in fact. I literally went, be a hoax, be a hoax, be a hoax, as I was going to all these different news sites to try to figure out if it was accurate. And then I don't remember if I posted anything about it or not, because it just seemed so bizarre to me. But now it seems to be like none of my friends have posted the fact that this person died, I must, because I have to be first with this. And I think that's how a lot of those celebrity death hoaxes get so far so fast, because nobody checks if they're real or not.
Right. Well, social media is a funny thing. I find that almost, so my premise for this column is that all social media is fundamentally self-promotional and narcissistic, whether you believe it is or not. I don't get into this so much, but the American Medical Association has done research that says every time you post on social media, it triggers a dopamine release. So you're actually getting like the same kind of affirmation and good vibes that you would from a run or someone giving you a hug. So it really, you might think, okay, I'm processing grief or I'm informing the masses. But really what you're doing is your body's feeling good because of all the likes, or even, well, I guess now the little crying faces or whatever people are clicking on. So it's kind of a selfish thing. It's a curated version of you that you're putting out there, and you're lassoing in a real person's death as part of that.
And by trying to always be first and to sort of break the news, it would make you feel even better about it. Like I had it first.
It's like, this is, it's, you know, the classic, like, where were you when you heard about it? And it's like, well, I was the first person who knew. as though it's like a bragging right. Oh, like none of my friends knew before I did that David Bowie died. It's very weird. I'm curious what you think about this. So today I was thinking about how before, say, not necessarily 2016, but let's just say, 2010 onward, I could count, on maybe one hand the number of big celebrity deaths that caused like public outpouring. And the ones that came to mind were like Michael Jackson, Princess Diana.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And now I feel like if an extra on Family Matters dies, that the world must stop for a minute.
I could tell you exactly. I could walk into the bar I was at, mm-hmm. and I could stand in the exact same spot where I stood and watched the monitors the night that Princess Diana was in the car accident and was in the hospital mm-hmm. and then was declared. I know exactly where I was. It was frozen for me. At Michael Jackson, I know exactly where I was too. And I know what mm-hmm. I know what I was doing and how I was reacting, because I was at work at a station. So we were trying to curate, sources to see if what we were wanting to say on the air was actually accurate. But you're totally right. That was really prior to at least the masses being on Facebook. Facebook existed, but it wasn't quite the same. TMZ, we know TMZ existed because they called it.
Right.
But I would almost contend that the fact that we all know that TMZ said that Michael Jackson was dead, confirmed that, before, 3 minutes before his death certificate was signed. I think now, we're all, not we, but people on social media are almost trying to be that person. Like, I had it first.
Well, the great, the big example that we had this week was with Carrie Fisher.
Right.
So the way that everybody found out that Carrie Fisher was likely dead, because of the way this person said it, was there was a YouTube star named Anna Akana, mm-hmm. who was on the same plane as Carrie Fisher, along with another social media star next to her, because they, they travel in packs. And so as, she was having her heart attack, this person tweeted something along the line of, oh, my God, I don't know how to process this, but Carrie Fisher has stopped breathing. I hope she's okay. And so here you are. At this point, her family likely has not been told. This is probably someone that got the Wi-Fi on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So she is at the beginning, maybe the first few minutes of her problem. And, if you're not breathing for an amount of time, there's a good chance you might be brain dead.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this person totally inflicting on another woman's privacy in order to share it with her 132,000 followers. And this just made me feel so gross and so disgusting. Thankfully, other social media users also felt so gross and so disgusting. They told her as much, and then she defended herself, saying she's a newfound fan of Carrie Fisher and her dog or some nonsense.
Sure, Gary. Gary tweets. Yeah.
I mean, I love Gary too, but it's still not, if you're a real fan, you'll let... And the thing that made me feel crazy is, okay, so imagine that she had a fighting chance on that plane.
Mm-hmm.
When, if you're alerting everyone at LAX
that she's already passed
about
away
to get off the plane in a medical emergency, there will be some crazy opportunists who are at the gate waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
Photographers, like you said, the TMZ types of people.
Well, they have TMZ. I have been told by a very valid source that TMZ, at least in that area, has reporters, and I'm doing air quotes on that, stationed at every hospital. At every hospital in LA. They just, that's what they do. Their job.
I mean, they're the closest thing. They remind me of a sort of a British tabloid, right?
Right.
Where you have certain papers in... So in the United States, even at a fabulous paper like the New York Post, where we do not pay sources. It is just common practice that the press of the United States doesn't pay sources. But in England, tabloids do pay sources, and that's why you read amazing, crazy stories, because people tell their crazy stories when they have a little money dangle in front of them.
Sure.
But TMZ, I believe, does. Like, they'll pay cab drivers, Lyft drivers, that whole thing to, you know, give them gossip they hear. So, like, LA is pretty much entirely bugged for TMZ.
It's the part of your article, your column, that was, all of it was a little bit unnerving. The part of it that was unsettling to me and angered me, and I will tell you, there's two parts. Steve Martin part very much made me angry, and we can talk. I spent probably a full day trying to figure out if I was wrong by not being upset by the tweet. I'm like, what am I missing? And if you're unfamiliar, Steve Martin, who was personal friends with Carrie Fisher and had known her for many, many years, tweeted a tribute to his friend that said, essentially, well, here it is. When I was a young man, Carrie Fisher was the most beautiful creature I had ever seen. She turned out to be witty and bright as well. I thought that that was wonderful. And if he had written that of me, I would have thought 1,000 high fives. Steve Martin, good for you. That's a lovely thing to say about your friend. She was beautiful, but she wasn't just beautiful. She was witty and bright, and nobody should judge him for saying what he said about his own personal friend.
Right. Well, it was bizarre. People jumped on him like crazy, to the point. So it's become very uncommon for people to delete tweets, right? Especially at that level. You take the backlash and it stays there. It's frowned upon to delete tweets. Well, Steve Martin deleted it. And like you said, it's people thought, so New York Magazine wrote a response story essentially analyzing Carrie Fisher interviews where, you know, she talks about how she never thought of herself as a sex symbol and didn't like to be objectified. All this is fine, but this is being written by people who did not know her.
Right.
Go ahead and analyze all the press interviews you want. That is not where you get insight into these people. He, as you said, was a close personal friend of hers. And how dare these people presume to know what their relationship was? You know, she might have found his tweet very funny because we don't know what the Carrie Fisher-Steve Martin dynamic was.
Right.
And yet people are punishing a friend for grieving in his way. That is the thing about the column. I was trying to say that social media has tried to become the main event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a Hollywood icon has died, and yet we're finding that we're digging up this controversy over a guy's innocent tweet about it.
Well, and more importantly, it became controversial when someone didn't tweet about it, and that's what was infuriating to me. I think more than even the Steve Martin situation, I had actually forgotten that Paul Simon had been married to Carrie Fisher. Tell me how that played out, because it angered me to my core.
So Paul Simon of Simon and Garfunkel was married to Carrie Fisher from 1984 to 1985. Briefly, I believe less than a year. They did kind of have an on again, off again thing. I believe he wrote some songs in reference to her. So now in the age of social media, because we like to be connected to celebrities, you know, how dare they not be connected to us? There was a number of users who are wondering when is Paul Simon going to talk? When is he going to tell us what he thinks about Carrie Fisher's death? And they started to kind of badger him about it. And finally he released about a day later, he releases a vague-ish statement, you know, saying, you know, Carrie was a wonderful girl. Yesterday was a very sad day. And all the headlines around the internet said things like, Paul Simon finally breaks his silence on Carrie Fisher's death. Can you believe that?
How dare they do that? He doesn't owe the world anything. People grieve in different ways. This is why I was so angry about it. Because it does seem like we're holding these celebrities to the standard that we feel they should do, but they're human beings. They can do or not do however they want to.
Right, and we're manufacturing this closeness with them. And the thing is, and as we've seen this year, because everyone is saying, you know, their 2016 was horrible because a bunch of people they don't really know died. you have a day of shock, and you know, maybe your lunch is ruined when you find out that a celebrity died, and then the sun rises and it's a new day and you're fine.
Right. Right.
These actual people in their lives that we are disturbing by, you know, demanding they have something to say. Or then when someone like Steve Martin says something, we say, oh, Steve, you've said the wrong thing.
Right.
They're actually going to continue mourning these people the next day and right. the day after.
Right. All right. Pardon me, Johnny. We are going to go to news. You have agreed to hold on. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff, including end of year lists. That's going to be next. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. I'll be back. Stanley here. I didn't want to talk over it. We are playing songs that get us motivated. That is Kristen Decker's selection. And what is it?
It is the song Listomania by Phoenix. It's nothing new, but I love it.
Well, neither was, you know, a little Madonna action from Johnny. We're going to get to Johnny in just a second. Hey, Vic, you were talking about the Hawks game. Puck drop is scheduled to be at noon, but they've got rain in the forecast. I heard earlier, but I need you to confirm that the NHL is clearly watching the weather forecast and they were going to announce or at least make a choice, make a decision at 7 as to game time. Is that accurate?
So, well, I hadn't heard that. The last email I got from our own Ryan Burrow mm-hmm. said that they're watching it and that they'll, of course, it'll be up to them. But yeah, that's good news. I hadn't heard that. 7 a.m., I guess. Right?
I believe, but this, we are a big hockey family. And so we had the hockey game on earlier. And I believe I heard that from one of the announcers. But again, I was walking through. So I have to, that's why I wondered if you see that, if you could confirm that for me.
Yes, I'll do a little digging here.
And we here at WGN will, of course, keep you informed as to when we will be broadcasting that game, because that's one of the things we do is bring you your Chicago Blackhawks. I bring you my Johnny Olesinski, writer for the New York Post.
This is good.
So close. You were just talking about the article that ran in actually yesterday's New York Post about social media users hijacking celebrity deaths, basically for their own, really not even to grieve, but kind of to be the one who's in the know. They feel they have to do even the lame RIP so-and-so, right? Just to feel like they're participating in something, even if it's a celebrity death from somebody who died 10 years earlier.
My favorite word I discovered that I wish was mine, but I used it for the column, is mournography. A great word.
That is basically a wonderful word. It's sad
that we've sort of become addicted to. We've become addicted to everything celebrity death, and the race to be the best at it. It's just fascinating that we've managed to turn. You know, I said it was like a cockfight at a funeral.
Yeah, you're just trying to like figure out a way to profit, even not necessarily monetarily, but emotionally with dopamine, as you mentioned, that they've proven that posting and getting likes or responses at least to your social media posts releases endorphins and dopamine, which I get is, you know, easier than working out, but sitting on the couch just makes you fat. So here we are at the beginning of a year, Johnny, which means we've all been inundated with journalistic end of year lists. Here's my take on them, and I hope you can understand the listeners. I'm not a fan. Not a fan of end of year lists.
You're so much not a fan of year end lists. The last time I was on, we were going to. You were very excited, like ready to go to really rip these rear end lists.
Yes,
year end
and rear end, not that far different. Yes.
And we were so enthusiastically talking about the Chicago theater season that we both
forgot
over it. But you're very angry about them. Why?
I find them to be, and I have many, many friends and definitely people I respect tremendously in this building. I find them, I feel they might be journalistically lazy. Does that seem...
Well, you don't have to respect anybody in that building. Just respect the fine journalist at the New York Post, okay? No, you don't know. You don't.
I am going to get struck by lightning.
There.
The Colonel's spirit is going to attack me in the parking lot for saying that.
Rick Kogan will be just fine whether you respect him or not.
Well, Rick Kogan didn't do an end of year list that I know of. Do you feel that they are lazy? Do they take the same amount of effort as a normal column? Is it just something like, well, it's the end of the year, nobody really wants to put in, you know, a full day's work, let's just compile a list?
So what bothers me about year-end lists, and it's sort of, they're half good and half bad. What's great is if you go, oh, one of the best shows of the year is, so let's first I'll limit it to live performing arts. So okay. One of the best shows of the year is still playing. I got to go see it. So it helps remind you that maybe something that opened a couple months ago, you missed the review, you didn't know it was a hit, and all of a sudden it's the number one or number two show of the year. You got to go. That's great. But you're right. But it doesn't really feel great as a reader to go, oh, a show that opened in January 5th happens to be the best show of the year.
And it closed.
Great.
Yeah.
And
it closed
11 months ago, and I can't go. It's just a force of habit at this point. Critics used to be much more powerful, too, where these year-end lists were very meaningful for the companies. They could say, oh, my gosh, you know, the Goodman Theater had the best show of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could trumpet it in their marketing, and it would make a big difference. Now it's just... it's January, you know, late December, January. Not much happens in the entertainment industry. That is a dirty little secret.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just not that much to write about unless you're writing about prestige films. Think about, you know, Chicago Theater. It's all holiday shows, right?
It is.
So that's
it
all,
is.
You know, all you get.
One of the shows we wanted to talk about the other day was Schooner. Which is talking about the Christmas boat, right? But it closed. Mm-hmm. It closed, and so I couldn't do a segment on it because it closed the next day. So that didn't make any sense. Although it would have been tremendous, and it had, you know, people liked it. It just didn't. It didn't work. So that's part of it. I understand from certain perspectives how they make more sense. If there are shows still open, if there are things that are coming out on Netflix. Right? These are the top things that you should be watching on Netflix. But that's from a very different perspective. You know, there are some lists. Those are either something that is making the writer money because they are, you know, that's what they do. They cover the Netflix and television scene. But there are some that really bother me, you know, like the top 10 trends that we hope die in 2017. I'm like, really? Why? Okay. I don't really necessarily need to know what you hope isn't around next year. That seems lazy.
Those I think are part of the BuzzFeedization of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a lot of people at, you know, our old fogey newspapers. Mm-hmm. And we look at BuzzFeed and Mashable and all these new websites, and we look at what they do and go, oh, this must be really working for them. They're writing lists about, you know, the funniest human-like cat expressions. We should also do this. So all of a sudden you see all these in-cheek year-end lists, and you're right. It kind of seems like I hate saying this because it's every journalist's least favorite thing to hear from a reader, but slow news day.
Yes. That seems to me, and I do not enjoy, I get sucked in. I don't like the lists online, such as the BuzzFeed or the Mashables, where they say the top 10 things you didn't know you could do with a toothbrush. Number 8 will shock you. And then I get sucked in, and it's clickbait. And what they're doing is it makes their website more marketable because they have more clicks and therefore they can charge more for advertising, which is the same annoying advertising that somehow takes you out of the app that you are in and takes you to their website that you didn't want to go to anyway. So that is very frustrating to me. And I've really gotten to the point where I'm like, just say no. Just say no. You don't need to know anything else to do with your toothbrush, because if it was worthwhile, you would have seen it already on Etsy or on YouTube or on one of those type places. This is very, very frustrating. And so to have legit journalists and full-on news sites doing that, it becomes incredibly frustrating. We're going to be talking about sort of fake news and how to delve your way through that and get to the core of what is actually true. That's going to be in our 4 o'clock hour with Michael Guerin when he joins me. But it is, to me, very frustrating that we're seeing more and more and more of these opinion pieces within full-on news, I don't know, sites, I guess.
Well, that is a, this is a much heavier topic than I expected to delve into. But did you see, there was so there was an interview that the executive editor of the New York Times, Dean McKay, and the editor of the Wall Street Journal gave in talking about how to cover the Trump administration. And the editor of the Wall Street Journal said, they were talking about how to deal with his repeated inaccuracies and falsehoods. Mm-hmm. And the Wall Street Journal editor said he felt uncomfortable calling them lies, because lies imply intention, right? So right. Then all of a sudden you have the writer, a news writer, presuming they know what's in his head. It's sort of the difference between kill and murder, right? Gotcha. You know, you could kill a deer, but you didn't necessarily intend to murder it.
Right.
It ran into the middle of the road. But what I've found lately is that what readers are wanting more and more is for the entire paper to be an op-ed section.
Because that's what we're finding. Well, especially the younger generation is finding, because that's where they're gathering most of their news is from. Not necessarily social media, but from their apps, and they're able to condition
right.
themselves. They're able to surround themselves with what they like. So, so they can find news sources that are biased to what they believe in. And therefore they, it's nice, warm and cozy. It's not challenging them in any manner.
Right. I've noticed that this is such a pet peeve, because suddenly, as with so many other things, everybody's an expert on journalism. So you'll have people constantly telling you what journalists are supposed to do. And then someone will write a column they like, and they'll post it online and say, this is great journalism.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go, well, is it? Was it really, you know, in-depth reporting that, you know, uncovered something we didn't know before? That's great journalism. It's just, you know, this is a column.
Right.
And yet people don't seem to know the difference. It's very porous now.
And the opinion pieces.
Which is a kind of scary thing to me.
Exactly. The opinion pieces have become so muddled with the actual, like, in-depth reporting. It is a mm-hmm. very scary time for people, which is why we're going to talk more about fake news. That's going to come up in the 4 o'clock hour. Hey, Johnny, hold on. There are two things I want to talk to you about in the last segment.
Okay.
We cannot not talk theater. We have to. And
right.
I got a very interesting email that I'm going to tell you about when we come back. And then we've got to talk about the Golden Globes. That's going to be next. Hannah Stanley with Johnny Olesinski filling in for Nick DiGilio. More after this on WGN. Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. On the phone with me is my good friend Johnny Olesinski, Twitter handle at JohnnyOMG, writer for the New York Post. He is a former theater writer for the Chicago Tribune. So it would be really, really, really hard for me to not tell you about this email I got the other day out of the blue. Johnny, somebody was trying to cast me in the new musical that is about to start rehearsals that is about to go into previews before it goes to Broadway, they wanted me to audition for Frozen.
Wait, why didn't you text me about this?
I don't know why I got the email. It was so random. I occasionally will get, you know, because I've done extra work in movies. So I get this, you know, hey, okay, we're casting for Chicago Med or something, right? We need, and I always get like the, we need somebody who is a police officer in uniform. I'm like, no, that's not me. I'm a mom. Like, that's who I am. Why am I getting this one? So they sent out a casting notification for Frozen the musical, which is opening in Denver in August for previews before it heads to Broadway in 2018. I'll forward it to you. I saved it.
And you're who they need.
Apparently they think that I should be a troll, but I need to be a soprano. But they listed all of the roles and I was like, I don't understand why I'm getting this email. Clearly, they've never heard me sing. So, it opens in Denver in August. I believe August 17th, but tickets aren't on sale because I already went to look because I want to see it in previews because it's going to cost me less money in Denver than it would cost me in New York unless I get to go with you. I'm just saying.
But think about this. So if you played the mezzo soprano troll in Frozen the musical in Denver, it would transfer to Broadway. There is no question of Frozen transferring to Broadway.
No, they already have dates. Yes,
the St. James Theater in spring 2018, I think.
Yes,
and so you can come move to New York and be my best friend here.
Well, duh.
I fed this to the casting director.
Here's the thing. I know every word from every song from Frozen, and I would pray that they don't add or delete anything for the Broadway version of it. However, again, I don't sing. And you already have a Broadway singer best friend, I'm just saying, who's about to start a new musical.
Right. My friends from Libertyville High School.
Yep.
Over by Lake Forest in Lake County is Philippa Sue, the Tony nominee Philippa Sue, who was played Eliza in the original Broadway cast of Hamilton.
Yes.
And she is currently the star, the title character in Amelie's musical. Remember that fun French movie, Amelie, with Audrey Tautou?
Yes.
And that will come to Broadway in April.
And her cheekbones are brilliant. I saw the oh my God, she's so pretty. But there's a precious picture of her on all of the print marketing where she's looking off to the side and being very Amelie, and her cheekbones are just perfect. And the thing is, they're not Photoshopped. She's just that pretty. So
no, she looks good. There's the way you will see her, I imagine, on the marquee, which will give me goosebumps every time I walk by. She looks like that if you were standing a foot away from her.
She's so cute. So you don't have any room for me as your New York singer best friend. You already have one. And the fact that I wouldn't get cast is secondary. That doesn't matter, even though it would be amazing to be dressed up like a troll.
But it does make me feel great to know that all these casting directors are listening in to our 3 a.m. segments where we rattle on about Frozen for 2 hours. That must be it.
Clearly. They do have a habit, though, of twerking the score when they do these Broadway productions. And the thing that you and I have discussed about Frozen, when I saw it on Broadway, and actually Rob Martier, newsman extraordinaire Rob Martier, and I have had this conversation. When we saw it, we both felt that it was written on screen for the stage. Disney is smart enough to realize, and I've seen Moana twice now, which Philippa Sue actually sang on that, you told me. But that was another one where I was like, they are writing these movies to be stage productions.
More and more, there's a nice working synergy between Disney theatricals, which is one division, and mainstream movie Disney. They actually will get more say into what they do. It might not seem this way, but that actually started in earnest with The Lion King.
That makes sense, because that was the big head, one.
Yeah. And the person who's now the head of Disney Theatricals was instrumental in getting that. They did not want to do The Lion King. He'll tell you that.
Well, it's
it was forced them to do it.
Incredibly complicated, the staging of that. The newer ones do not seem to be as such, except Let It Go, where there's a whole ice castle that's going to show up on stage. We'll see how that plays out. I will get to see it when I'm in Denver, because I'm already looking for tickets. I am going to ask you briefly. Well, one, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask if you'll stay with us, because starting in the 3 a.m. hour when we come right out of news, we are talking about New Year's Eve broadcasts that shouldn't have happened, all of which happened last night. So I want to know your opinion on those, especially because you were not far away from where most of these were occurring. But before we go to the news, tell me a little bit about the Golden Globes. Is this something you're excited about? Should we as viewers be excited about it?
I'm excited.
It's not like Tony's exciting. That's different.
No, I love the Tonys. The Tonys. And now that I get all, all dolled up for the Tonys to sit at the basement of the community center two blocks away where they, force the press to go. And I'm in my tux. I do get to go to a few parties, but it's just hilarious being in this kind of dingy basement for the Tonys while everyone's dressed up.
Someday, someday we will both go.
Someday.
Yeah.
The Golden Globes. So this year, I do think this year was a year of great movies that mainstream audiences don't really care about.
Okay.
And the selection for the Golden Globes are usually a little more inclusive of big blockbuster films because they have the musical and comedy category.
Mm.
So you get a few, that's where you can see like Deadpool being nominated or now Florence Foster Jenkins, which does have a reasonable shot of getting an Oscar nomination too. I do love the Golden Globes though, because it's like the frat party of award shows. Everybody's drunk. It's not so dusty like the Oscars are. Generally, the hosts are pretty good.
Yes. Well, Jimmy Fallon is hosting it this year. But in the past, we've seen Tina Fey and Amy Poehler do it. All right. We are going to get to news. And speaking of drunk frat parties, that's going to take us right into us talking about New Year's Eve when we come back. Johnny Olesinski, New York Post writer, will continue with me. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. Joining me on the phone is Johnny Olesinski. He will be back with me in just 10 seconds. But I want to first tell you that this is what? LCD Sound Systems, Miss Kristen Decker? This is one of Kristen's songs that gets her motivated. 312-981-7200. You can call in with your songs or you can text those in. Number is the same, 312-981-7200. Hey, Johnny, did you happen to go down to Times Square last night for the big New Year's Eve?
I actively avoid Times Square on New Year's Eve. The post office
is right there,
48th Street, 6th Avenue, and Times Square, is just about there, and 7th Avenue, right? 7th
right.
Avenue and Broadway, and then all the way to 42nd Street. And last year I was working until about 10:30, and I just saw the people flooding in, and you really don't find that many New Yorkers there. It tends to be tourists, which is fine. Come to our fair city, buy our goods and services. But I don't need to see them all at their drunkest, sweatiest, and most, pushed together. So, but apparently Mariah Carey was up to no good.
Oh, and we've got audio. Kristen Decker will play it right now.
We didn't have a check for this song, so we'll just say it went to number one, and that's what it is. Okay. Feels like a dream. We're missing some of this logo, but it is what it is. But I like the way.
Okay, so I could have sung it. You've got me feeling emotion. I don't know how much harder it could have been to hear. And here is my contention. The dancers stayed in step. The dancers didn't miss anything. Johnny, did you watch this on online this today at all?
I did. It's thankfully, because I was forewarned and I'd read many ensuing stories of, you know, allegations from Mariah's team that the producers sabotaged her. And then, you know, she tweeted that expletive happens.
Right.
It was cringy to watch, but still not so much as if I can't imagine live viewers. I hope they were, you know, plenty drunk when they were watching it, because it's quite, I mean, it's embarrassing. And all those big Times Square Megatrons.
Right. And that's what I feel most bad for the people who camped out. And I was talking to Kristen about this earlier. I said, maybe there were plants. Maybe the producers said, hey, we're going to sweep you in right before Mariah and put you close to the stage because you're pretty, or whatever reason. There's stranger mm-hmm. things have happened. But many of those people get their hours and hours and hours before because they love Mariah and they wanted to hear her sing. And then, you know, whether or not the producers sabotaged it for ratings and social media hits, etc., she was the one who reacted the way she did. She was the one who kind of like pranced around the stage and told the dancers to get out of her way or just carry her around the stage. I was able to hear the track. I don't know, because again, we'll review, I'm not a singer. I don't know how different that would be. But if the dancers were able to hear enough of it that they could stay in sync. I mean, it wasn't like one of them could do it. They all were in sync with their steps. They had clearly rehearsed it. I don't understand how she couldn't have made the most of it better than she did.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, it is always nice to see a diva show her top divadom, which was what that was. What that was, and you know, and Mariah Carey is one of the dying breed. I also give her props, usually for outdoor performances like that. Those songs tend to be lip synced, like with the Macy's Day Parade.
Yep.
So, props to her for trying. That is something, you know, I wish there was some music experts that were awake at this hour that could explain to me the earpiece thing, because so many musicians at her level seem reliant on having to have a little earpiece in so they can hear themselves or hear the music. But it's like what you said, those dancers are all perfectly in sync and they keep dancing. They're not, you know, the show must go on.
And she, if you've not seen this, she comes out and does a little bit of a thing at the very beginning of the performance where they have these feather boa fan things around her. And then they kind of cover her with it. And I think that's where it goes downhill. Because when those when they flip back away from her and she's making this grand entrance, you can see her pull one of the earpieces or maybe both of them out. She knew at that point she didn't have those. They weren't working properly or something. So maybe she was trying to hear the track without them. I don't know. I can tell you that I was watching people's reaction to it online as it was occurring, because everything was exploding on my phone, Mariah, 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 and I did not see it myself until today. And I watched it and I was mortified a lot, not necessarily even for the people watching it, because I was like, well, that's just something to scratch your head over. But I felt really bad for the people who were there, because a lot of them put a lot of effort into going to see her. They are super fans and are probably defending her today. What I found most interesting was the fact that how many people kept watching it. It was like painful to watch.
You just couldn't turn away.
You couldn't
I
turn away.
I watched it so many times online. I could not stop, because there are just so many things to analyze. And then I read the behind the scenes coverage, I guess, that they had, or Inside Scoop, where there was like a team of producers that had to just try to get Mariah to show up on time because she's used to Mariah time. And when you are, you know, competing with the ball dropping at midnight,
there's no flex.
No Mariah time.
Right.
I guess supposedly, rumor has it, that somebody on her staff even asked them, so does this ball drop really happen like right at midnight? Like that's how in her own Mariah world she is.
That's interesting. The thing is though, it's her song that she has sung.
That's what I don't understand. I'm like,
times.
Do you really need to hear?
You've got me feeling emotion deeper than I've ever before, or whatever. I could fake it, right? I mean, or there's something where you're dancing. Then the full on haters went into the costume that she was wearing.
I don't see anything wrong with the costume.
I don't either. And here's the thing: if she had walked out and killed that performance, everybody would be like, "Man, did she throw down? She looked fierce." But instead, now everybody's ripping on her because she divaed it up.
I'm glad she did that while she has the reality show. That is sort of bothersome that she has kind of a track. You know, Mariah's world is either going on now or just happened.
Oh boy!
So there is a little. It does ring of ploy a little bit.
I don't,
because she's, you know, she's. The tough thing with someone like Mariah Carey is I don't think anybody in this conversation would ever say that Mariah Carey is not a supremely talented vocalist.
Without question.
Well, I feel like she used to be.
No, I think she can still hit those notes.
Not the highest.
It's like year by year, because this is what I hear whenever our music critic goes to. She has a yearly Christmas concert, several Christmas concerts at the Beacon Theater. Mm-hmm. And some years he'll be like, Mariah was a little off this year. And then the next year he'll say, oh, Mariah, you know, kicked it out of the park.
She's back.
I know it's not the sports phrase.
But right. No, that's totally fine. Yeah, I don't, but I understand. And actually, when I was on, I guess Saturday morning ish, I don't know, whatever. When I filled in for Matt Bubala, all the days are blending. When I filled in for Matt Bubala, we were talking about the Chi-Town Rising, which is still, it hurts me to say it. It just is a dumb name. But we were talking about it, and I said, I'm not that into the broadcast because they all are kind of train wreckish. And I go, so Ryan Seacrest booked Mariah. I said that. And then I was like, we've all heard her sing 1,020 times, you know, like how many times is it, you know, her Christmas song? It's great, but it's gotten overplayed. And I think a lot of that is, I didn't feel that she was the draw that maybe a lot of people who were booking her thought she might be. That's
no,
my opinion.
And it's like,
but,
this is
oh, but she became that way. Yeah, of course. But I don't think that it's accurate that they would have thought, let's sabotage Mariah Carey and make sure the monitors don't work and see how bad it gets. Because other singers would have made that work.
Also, everyone thinks everything in media is so deliberate. And I swear, those nice live segment producers that were up super, like, they're not working hard to sabotage Mariah Carey. Like, do you think the top
they're probably terrified of her when they booked her. They
I'm
thought
guessing.
Oh gosh, she's gonna be a diva. Then I can't, being
out.
A producer, I can't even imagine what, because they're, of course, they're the ones that are getting blamed for it,
right?
And when really it's like, well, Mariah, you didn't put on any showmanship at all.
Right.
No, she didn't even try to fake it. It was just more, I just
Tony,
love how she's like,
Tony
well,
Bennett.
We didn't have a mic check for this. Well, I'm sorry.
Maybe if you'd shown up, because the dancers had rehearsed. I'm just saying. They got it. They pulled it together.
So, what I wish is, I wish that the, just like what you said, showmanship. I wish that the classic musician's showmanship hadn't been conditioned out of people. You know what would have been a great moment if she said, cut the music, and then someone as good as her gave us an a cappella rendition of like All I Want for Christmas, or one of the songs she was going to sing, and then the crowd joined in, or something like that.
You're absolutely right.
As opposed to
she could have taken control of that situation far better than marching around the stage and telling the dancers to carry her. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. Johnny, do you have another segment in you?
What's it about?
We're continuing our New Year's Eve talk, but this time it's about hashtag drunk Don Lemon.
Okay. I'll stay with you.
Okay. Hold on one second. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. We're going to talk about Drunk Don Lemon. That's going to be next into BGN. Hannah Stanley, I am not wearing cashmere. I'm listening to cashmere. Another Kristen Decker favorite. Text in to 312-981-7200. We're getting great songs in, things that pull you out of the doldrums, get you motivated, get you moving. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about those pretty soon, actually. But in the meantime, Johnny Olesinski, New York Post's very own former Chicago Tribune theater writer and my friend, joins me on the phone, continues to be on the phone with me from New York in the Time Warner building, I believe. Hey, Drunk Don Lemon, Johnny, trending for the second year in a row.
You know, I'm beginning to think after the Mariah Carey hoopla and Drunk Don Lemon take two, maybe we should just accept that New Year's Eve broadcasts are a hot mess.
Yes, they are all hot messes. All of them. This is the Chi-Town Rising that happened behind me, just across the river up the Hyatt. I really didn't watch much of. I watched the end of it. But to me, it seemed like the coordination of the timing was a little off and slightly awkward. Kristen, you were watching Channel 7, which is the ABC broadcast.
Yeah, I was watching the ABC broadcast, and where I was at, we didn't have the sound on. So it was just visual, and I was kind of like eyeing it as I'm making small talk. I'm like just making sure nothing completely horrible or odd was happening. And you know, from what I could tell from the sound off, like
it's always a little
I just don't understand it.
Awkward. And Jose Sanders a few years ago was at a place and I mean, he's great. He's a good guy and he was doing a good broadcast, but there were like 12 people at the place that he was at and they were like, oh, it's so exciting. I'm like, no, but it's not. It's really not. And then to have Don Lemon, who is a professional journalist, a full on respectable host of CNN Tonight for the second year in a row, get drunk so much that it is trending Drunk Don Lemon. He got his ear pierced.
And he bragged about that because it happened last year. He was like, I was trending on Twitter last year, Drunk Don Lemon.
Right, he was like, that's not a thing that you should be proud of.
I would not
of.
Be bragging about that.
He got his ear pierced, Johnny, live during the broadcast. And then in classic drunk person fashion, says, don't get blood on the jacket. Because that's what you should be worried about.
I've got to return it to Brooks Brothers. That's actually what he said. So now we know his secret.
Okay. Kristen's got audio. Of course she does. She's Kristen Decker.
I don't know what he's thinking.
All right. Hold on.
At least it's just his ear. You know what I'm saying?
Here we go, Brooke.
I don't know what he's saying.
Oh, God.
Don't get blood in the jacket. It has to go back. It goes back to Brooks Brothers.
Here we go. Here's the needle. Here's the needle.
One, this is taking place in New Orleans. So when they used, I've had my ears pierced. I have three piercings on each side. I only wear one earring now on each side. But I've had it done multiple times. They use the little gun. You go to Claire's Boutique, I actually didn't go to Claire's, but it's the same thing. My daughter had her ears pierced when she was like 8 months old. Claire's Boutique, gone, bang, zoom. No, not Don Lemon. They go all New Orleans voodoo style, and they've got the gigantico needle. I could knit with it. That goes through his ear live on television.
Right. Don Lemon turned New Year's Eve into like a fifth grade slumber party.
They didn't even put a block of ice behind it to deaden it. They just went straight.
Oh, he had no feeling because he was.
He's feeling it.
He
today.
Was lit. He told everybody too. Right. I was like, you had asked me, Hannah, as a producer, like,
would you have allowed this?
There are two schools of thought there. Mm-hmm. As a producer, you're always supposed to make the talent look the best that they can in the best possible light. I feel like, especially given that it's CNN, it's Don Lemon, where usually he's covering serious news topics.
Right.
This does not put him in a credible light, in the best possible light. But if you're going for any PR is good, you know, bad PR is still good PR.
Right.
This is perfect because we're still talking about it. I remember the network. Like, I don't remember what network Mariah was on, but I know that CNN's Don Lemon was a drunk
CNN. However, I fault a little bit. I feel like there was probably a producer because it says he posted on Twitter as midnight approached in Louisiana. He tweeted CNN producers and Brooke B. CNN trying to convince me to get a tattoo or a piercing of some sort. Should I? However, that doesn't mean that the producer should have allowed him to continue drinking full strength drinks. As this continued, I'm quite sure he wasn't bellying up to the bar himself. They were likely bringing him cocktails.
And some producer wised up because they cut his mic right before, I think it was right before the ball. It was either right before the ball drop or afterwards. But you hear him say, 2016 was awful, and then dead silence. Like, you couldn't even hear background noise. So somebody in the control room was like, kill it, kill it, kill it. Like, we don't want him to say something he's going to regret.
All right. As I continue reading through the article, that's going over this broadcast. It says it wasn't an empty threat as he recruited a piercer shortly afterward to stick a needle through his earlobe live on television. So I don't think that, because Decker, you and I were talking about this off air, like before the show, this had to be somehow planned because I would be thinking, shut this down. I don't understand why this is happening. Perhaps there was a piercer who just happened to be there with his tools. I would have vetted this a little bit more, I think. These are supposed to be well-rehearsed productions. I don't think this is where we're not seeing this, Johnny. This is not showing up as professional.
I wish CNN, so my favorite New Year's Eve broadcast is Anderson Cooper and Kathy Griffin.
Well, this is part of it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Right. And so they are a perfect team, right? There's Anderson Cooper is allowed to keep his very respectable journalist persona. And then Kathy Griffin kind of like, you know, claws away at it. And so it's a little bit of a buddy. It's a buddy cop movie. It's, you know,
it's like a road movie. Yes.
Right. It's like Abbott and Costello or something. And it works really well. And as much as, you know, she is unhinged and has had her share of crazy media moments, you expect it. Then with Don Lemon, it's just very odd, isn't it? Like, why is Don Lemon getting his ear pierced and then going on tequila soaked rants about how awful
Right. And then
good TV, I guess.
And then waking up the next morning talking about how hungover he is. I mean, this just does not I don't feel like it puts him in the best light for being professional the rest of the year. That's just me. That's just me. Johnny, I thank you as always for joining me. I wish you were here, of course. But thank you so much for, one, going to the office to hang out with us. And two.
I can't be fake about that. I actually ended up staying home. I'm in my apartment.
I wondered.
I am being as loud as humanly possible right now because all of my neighbors were having these like riotous parties yesterday. And I was in bed, like blasting Bridget Jones's Baby to, to, you know, try to get the noise out. So right now, I'm just pacing around my apartment.
Do it.
Stomping.
Do it.
Yelling.
This is a great song. Years and years and years and years, it still is like, yeah, I can run up those steps in Philadelphia. Yeah, I can. And jump around next to a statue of me. I've been asking you guys, and people have been texting into 312-981-7200. What song motivates you? What song gets you moving? What song just, if you've got to bring it, what song is the one? Or what song, if you hear randomly, do you go, oh, that just turned my whole day around? I've got a couple. We played Try Everything, which is by Shakira. Not necessarily the person I would think of as a motivating singer. But that's my new song. That's my new jam. I got a couple that we're going to talk about in a little bit. So if you've got them, let us know. Also, really interesting text. We, of course, were talking about Mariah Carey. John in Chicago texted in, and thank you, by the way, because this really brings more clarity than I had on my own. Mariah had in-ear monitors in both ears, no stage monitors. They completely conceal your ears to the outside sound by design. Even with them pulled out, it's very hard to hear on stage when you're behind the speakers. It just sounds like a big, messy wash of sound with very little clarity. The dancers could probably hear at least a beat reference, which is all they need. And they did have one small stage monitor I saw, but very hard for Mariah to hear pitch and beat reference. If she did start singing, her voice being loud in her ears and loud coming from the house speakers would have drowned out what little she could hear of the track. For any musician and vocalist, this is pretty easy to understand. Still, she could have handled it better. John, I completely agree with you. But I do very much, because I am not a singer-performer. I don't get it. I didn't understand why she couldn't figure it out. This brings some clarity. But I think Johnny raised a really good point. A little bit of showmanship, where she could have gone, you know what? I'm having struggles. Cut that music. Let's just sing something else. And she could have done that. She is a skilled musician. She could have pulled out something a cappella and, you know, made the dancers sway back and forth, or cleared the dancers. They still would have gotten paid. It would have been, she could have pulled it out, and it would have been a showstopper for a good reason, instead of the reason that we were talking about. Kristen and I spoke quite a bit before the show about healthy choices. This is one of those times of the year where everybody's like, I'm going to the gym. I don't know how the gym was today. I did work out. I worked out at home. Did you go to the gym?
I did not go to the gym today.
All right. Esmeralda, did you go to the gym today?
No.
All right.
No.
This is the one thing that we will see in the next like 3 days on social media, or people walking around the office going, I went to the gym at my normal time and all the machines were crowded by the people who made, you know, the New Year's resolutions. I can't wait for 3 more weeks to go by and then they won't show up anymore. This is a big thing. Everybody's like, I'm going to be healthier. I'm going to work out every day. I've been working out for several weeks. But Esmeralda, have you started it already? Did you start it today or you start it tomorrow? You're doing a whole 30.
Yeah. I'm going to officially start when I wake up today.
Okay.
Which would technically be my breakfast.
Which is going to be
like 2 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a whole thing. I actually have a training appointment with my trainer at 7 a.m. So I'm off here at 5. I'm going to go grab a little breakfast. And then I'm going to drive to the gym. And then I'm going to do the training. Because if I go home and sleep, that doesn't help me. Then I'm going to wait. It doesn't work. So I have to do it before I go to sleep. And then I can go home and go to sleep. Because that's a thing. So are you, why did you decide to do the whole 30? Because it was the new year, or because you just wanted to do it and it happened to be the new year?
I wanted to do it. And then I decided I wanted to do this and probably before November. And then I thought, I can't start now.
Because of the holidays.
Yeah, all the holidays. Just like, I'm just going to ruin it. It's not going to work. So let's start in
what is the whole
next
30?
Month. Whole 30 is a program.
It's a book.
But yeah, it's a whole program where it's essentially like an elimination diet. So you don't eat soy, dairy, sugar, legumes.
Caffeine.
No, you can do caffeine.
Oh, that's better.
No alcohol. No alcohol. Okay. And then no like crazy things like sulfites, MSG, stuff like that. So I can't.
That's how I eat all the time anyway.
Yeah. Well, so I don't. I do not.
No.
So this is going to be quite a change. And also I've been feeling yucky and very tired, and I was thinking I need to do something. So this is perfect to see, you know, if stuff is making me feel funky. I can find out, and I'll be a little healthier because right now my fridge is full of vegetables, which it usually isn't. So this is forcing me to try to have just better habits in general.
So do you start the Whole30? Amy Guth introduced this to me, and I did a little research on it when I was going through some health stuff earlier this year. Do you start cold turkey? I mean, I know I read that you were doing like your fridge is ready. You are prepared. So you don't eliminate slowly, like, oh, you take like no more soy sauce after week two. Do you just start?
No, you just
clean?
Do it. Yeah. You start cold turkey.
All right. Are you expecting any headaches?
No, I don't think so. I don't eat. I already don't really eat that much in terms of carbohydrates.
Cred. Okay.
Or too much sugar, because I don't really have a sweet tooth. I have a potato chip savory tooth.
Yeah, that's a good tooth. I like that tooth.
So this kind of works because, you know, like you can still eat things like, you know, smoked salmon or prosciutto or things like that. So I think I'll be okay.
Okay.
We'll find out.
Is it gluten also? Are you eliminating some grains?
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, no grains as well. No beans. Peanuts.
Oh, because of the legumes. Okay, so the beans would be challenging for me.
See, I don't eat that many beans.
Yeah, I do.
To notice.
No peanut butter would be challenging for me.
I don't like peanut butter.
Okay.
So it works out so well. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I don't eat that anyway.
And actually, then you do it for 30 days.
Yeah, you do 30 days. And then what I like about it is they have in the FAQ, they say things like, well, what if I just have a bite of something? Do I have to start over? And they're like, yeah, you are an adult. Own up to your choice.
Yeah. Stop being such a millennial.
Yeah. You just have to suck it up and do this for 30 days. It's not that hard.
It is very interesting. In the words of Kimmy Schmidt, you can do anything like for 10 times, right? She says, you just count to 10. You can do that. And
yeah,
then
you just have to
count
take it one day at a time.
But so, yeah, if you take a bite of peanut butter, you either spit it out immediately or you start over.
Right. It's not because, oh, well, you ruined the rules. It's more to see, you know, because you ate that peanut butter. Now we can't really truly tell, does peanut butter make you
have an intolerance?
Then
do you reintroduce things to figure out what
you're
having an issue?
Yeah, you do them slowly. It's like after the 30 days, it's like a 10-day period where you kind of just start introducing things slowly. So you eat some beans, see how it makes you feel, maybe go back to doing Whole30 and then just kind of seeing like, did I feel okay? Did I? If I did, then cool. I can eat beans. It's fine.
Okay. So then the bread, if all of a sudden you feel sluggish, or bloated, then you realize you're having a problem with some aspect of the grains.
Right. Same with dairy.
Right.
That might be a little bit of a problem for me because it's no cheese.
Yeah, no, that's a thing. That's real.
And I enjoy cheese.
And there are legitimate addiction properties to cheese where it does make you crave it. That's not just
fake. Because it's so delicious.
There are also chemicals in it that do. Yes. That is something. I don't do very much dairy at all. I do not enjoy. I like almond creamer. But if you put almond milk in your coffee, no es bueno.
And it's funny because they're like, you can have almond milk. You just have to look at the ingredients. And a lot of almond milk has carrageenan in it.
Yes.
Which is I think seaweed extract or something.
Which is not
allowed. And in the program, it's not allowed.
That's
so you have to find a almond milk that is compliant.
Does it seem overwhelming, like being like, oh my gosh, is this allowed? Is this not allowed?
It's insane to find out how many things have sugar. I went to the supermarket today and there was, I was looking for chicken, just some cooked chicken because I wanted to bring something to eat. all the chicken has sugar because it's the marinades that they put it in, like pre-cooked chicken. Even the kind that was in the store, like that they shredded, it had sugar.
Right, because all of the marinades and the barbecue sauces, they all
ketchup,
ketchup,
some mustard,
big one,
hot sauces.
Yep,
a lot have sugar. I was looking at tuna, canned tuna. You can't have soy on the thing. There's soy
is in everything.
It has soy.
Yes,
the tuna has soy. I had to buy like a kind of a higher end tuna because it doesn't have soy or sugar or anything like that. It's insane to just realize there is sugar in everything.
Well, I applaud you, and whenever I'm on with you, I'm going to hear an update because this is. I as soon as I saw you're doing it, I was like, this is so great for her.
I know, and I have to really stick with it because I said something.
Well, but
to
and
the
also
masses.
And
so people will
also,
be asking me
and
like,
also
how's
for
it going?
Your own health, you know, whatever.
Right. Right.
All right. Filling in tonight for Nick DiGiglio. I'll be with you until 5 a.m. And then I get to see Pete McMurray. I'm super excited. He's coming in. No opening bell because it is Monday and markets are closed. It's Monday, right? It's Monday. Anybody, are you messed up with days because of the holiday or no? Kristen Decker?
Not really.
Oh, and Jane's coming in too. Jane Manzares. I've known her for years and years. That's exciting.
Bradley, or Pete, Jane, and I all went to Bradley University.
Did you all know each other? Let's say no. Okay.
No.
All right.
A little bit of a... Jane we're not in school at the same time,
Jane
I should
and
say.
Pete, I didn't think so. Jane and Pete and I all worked at a radio station, not this one, together before. So there's that. That's kind of a thing. So I get to say hi to both of them. That's exciting times. So that will be in an hour and 10-ish minutes that they will be here. A couple of things that we're talking about that we want you guys to participate in. And the number you can do that at for both texting and calling is 312-981-7200. People have been texting and thank you very much. Their motivation songs, and we're getting quite a few. Kristen, you had a couple that were great. You had you played Kashmir, which is not, I don't necessarily think of it as like, that wouldn't be my alarm ringtone. Like, I wouldn't be like, yes.
I usually use motivation songs for when I'm working out, like when I'm running or if I have to lift weights or, you know, anything like that. That's how I use music. Or if I'm on the L and I just need to wake up before.
Sure. Okay, so Kashmir, I could see that where you're like, din-in-in.
Yeah, so it's just like that intense, like, guitar. I just love that. And then I love anything by LCD Sound System. And I love the entire Beyonce album. I know Beyonce is a favorite from a lot of women, but she just kicks ass.
But you liked Lemonade, and I haven't listened to much of the Lemonade album. So I need to get on that.
It's so good.
Okay. I like Girls, Who Runs the World. That's one of my songs because, like, yeah, we do. You don't know it, but we do. And then I said, try everything, which is the one. And then there's that song by Little Mix called Salute, which I here's how I came into contact with that song as a motivation. There was a promo or a commercial for the women athletes of the Olympics. And that's the song that they played. And that song was everything. I was like, you salute women. That's awesome. It is. That's one of the ones where if I'm going, I've started doing comedy. And if I'm driving to the club to do a set, that's one of my songs. That's the like, I've got this song. I like that song. Other people are texting it. Really, really interesting how people are approaching this. Somebody wrote the theme from Knight Rider, and I totally get that. It's not similar to Kashmir, but it's instrumental and it kind of has that rhythmic like building. Another person texted in the Rocky theme, which is the one that we played a break or two ago. And 708 texts in, and I love this. And I had forgotten about this as an entity really that was motivating. And but it's great. Don't Rain on My Parade from Funny Girl.
I always said I wanted to walk down the aisle if I got married to Don't Rain on My Parade. Just I don't know.
That's amazing.
It just cracks me up.
I didn't walk down. I walked down to a different type song. It was Love Changes Everything from Aspects of Love, Andrew Lloyd Webber. No surprise that I chose a Broadway selection. That's just who I am. That's why Johnny and I are friends. Jay texted in that he likes the opening audio from the Carpenter song, calling occupants of interplanetary craft on Made in America. I don't know that.
That doesn't really sound like a Carpenter song.
It doesn't. But man, I don't get super motivated by many Carpenter songs. But what I do is you can YouTube. And if you've not done this, and I'm looking off, I'm not looking at Kristen, but Kristen, you should do this too. You can YouTube Karen Carpenter, like clean audio, and they will like the vocal tracks, just the vocal tracks. It will bring tears to your eyes, her talent. She did not need to be synthesized or backed up, or she could have done it without monitors. She could have just said, you know what, let's just wing it. And she would have sung close to you, and everybody at Times Square would have cheered. Karen Carpenter. The other one who you can hear just the vocal tracks, they released them when Adele was on Saturday Night Live. And her clean vocal tracks, Karen Carpenter-ish. Ask. Don't Rain on My Parade is awesome. I love that song. I'm so glad that you texted that in. 312-981-7200 if you have other songs. I'm scrolling through text after text. There are many.
Do you find female empowerment songs are your go-to like song that like pumps you up, or what do you work out to?
Oh, that's really interesting. It depends on what I'm doing, like Runaway by Bon Jovi. If I'm running, that's one of my songs. It really has to, this is going to sound so American Bandstand. It has to have a good beat and be easy to run to. Right. That's my thing. Yeah. Somebody else texted in Motivation Song. Do you know that? I don't know that song. By Tegan and Sarah, is that right? I lost the text. Another text just came
in. I do love Tegan and Sarah.
Okay, so it's Motivation Song, I guess. So we'll have to listen to that one. Superstar, best Carpenter song ever. 630 just texted in. No, I really don't go to the female empowerment songs. I really go to something that just makes you, like it's the beat, and it's kind of sometimes it's definitely the lyrics. I was on a cruise once, and that song that I Will Go Down With The Ship, right? I will go down with the ship. They kept playing that, and I was on a cruise. I'm like, do they not know what this song is saying? Why would they play this? It was just on the general audio. I'm like, somebody had to make this choice. This song was chosen. I don't get it. Man, this is totally true. 708, Eye of the Tiger. Jim Peterik. I heard that on the way in tonight.
Did it pump you up?
That will get you moving. That isn't actually in my like exercise playlist, but yeah, it definitely will get you moving. But I don't go to really so much the female empowerment songs as I do just the empowerment songs or something that for whatever reason strikes a chord. Pardon the pun, that makes me feel strong and powerful and like I can handle anything. It's very Allie McBeal. Allie McBeal.
That's
had,
a blast from the past.
It is, but she had Tracy Ullman, who was her, I don't know where these references are coming from, but like was her psychologist and said, you need to find your song. And that's like, that's the one that's going to get you always. It's going to pull you out of your doldrums.
That's so much pressure, though, to just think of one song.
I know.
Because there's so many great ones out there.
So many. And that's why I asked some women what they go to, what their go-to songs are. 312. You just nailed it. Jackie Wilson's Higher and Higher. Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher and Higher. That is my parents' all-time favorite song ever. I don't care what is happening. If you play that song, you are in a great mood. It is a great beat. It's easy to dance to. It is just the best. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, it is right there.
It's Monday. You just need something to pump you up.
Oh, I'm so glad you texted that in. Oh, it's the best. It really is. And they use it in Ghostbusters, too. It's awesome. A different version, but they still used it. The goo likes Jackie Wilson. That's fantastic. And 630 texts in, it's like hearing Jim Croce on an airplane pre-board or leaving on a jet plane by John Denver. Yeah, it is. That's for sure. It's very, very strange. Lose Yourself by Eminem. I don't know that one. Do you know that one?
Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Okay. But if you want to, especially if you want to work out, like do any sort of kickboxing or like punching.
I don't think I've gotten to that point in my physical fitness where I could be doing that. I don't think there needs to be kickboxing. Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. He will be back with you tomorrow at 2 a.m. I will be with you here for the next 54 minutes-ish. I'm excited to get to see Pete McMurray and Jane Manzouras. I'm guessing you're excited to get to listen to them as well. And David Jennings with your news. That starts at 5 a.m. Joining me right now, Michael Guerin. He is a television news producer and a former WGN television intern. You worked on the morning news and throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Those people are good.
They were a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah, they were. Dean Richards is a big fan of yours.
Dean Richards, yeah, it's funny. He's always commenting on my Facebook page, which, you know, every time I get that, I get like, you know,
a little
kind
bit of
starstruck.
He doesn't comment on mine. I know.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm just saying he likes you. That's good. I think he likes me, but who knows? I'll work on that. I'll mention it. I'll ask him. The reason we have you here, Michael, is that you are you've been a political junkie and a political fan and a political reporter.
Yeah.
For many, 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 many years, mm-hmm. Which I find incredibly interesting because you're young.
Yeah.
But this is kind of, it's one of those things like the mom will say, I knew he was going to be an architect because he was using Legos and just, he was so talented when he was two. You're going to be a political reporter or something because this is who you are.
Yeah, I've been doing it since middle school.
Yeah.
Covering politics. I covered the 2008 election during middle school, which was kind of fun.
At a big level.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to cover because the RNC was in, the Republican National Convention was mm-hmm. in the Twin Cities. So mm-hmm. it was the closest one to be able
sure.
to go to. So they sent me to that one.
In middle
I worked
school.
For Scholastic News, the kids magazine.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
In so, middle school.
So yeah. I did that. That was fun.
Yeah.
And I worked for the MASH, which is the Chicago Tribune's high school newspaper.
Yes.
Upstairs. So that was a lot of fun.
So this is why we go to you, because you have been doing this at a high level for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So when you were in middle school and high school and college, you have been taught journalistic integrity, journalistic principles for how we report on news.
Yes.
There are reasons that I say it is being reported or it is alleged, because we have to say those things in order to make sure people understand certain nuances within the news. These are things you're being taught. No one else has to play by those rules lately.
Yes. No, I think that was the kind of the shock of going from school and learning this the whole time, that the public trusts us.
Yes.
And then going into the real world and seeing, no, they don't. I've seen it on a level of where I work, and I've seen it on the national level in this, especially this past election year.
All right. So when you are in school and taking classes for journalism and news writing, et cetera, and I did this too. I was a journalism major.
Mm-hmm.
What are you learning about fake news? Because this has to be something you're talking about.
We weren't. I mean, it's not something that's brought up a ton.
Well, it never was a thing.
No, it wasn't a thing. I was thinking.
Well, it was a thing, but it was a thing that came in tabloids.
Yeah,
like we knew the National Enquirer.
Yes, but you knew not to trust that. You knew the grocery store aisle, not to
anything from Britain. Like, you know, we were a little.
I heard that earlier this morning. Yeah, that they pay their. That's something you don't do
they
in
pay
the United
their
States.
Sources. Well, not they did. We didn't used to do it.
Well,
yes.
People in the United States, I think. Also, I've learned in any big disaster, if I'm tweeting people for photos of, you know, a plane crash or something like that, they want to get paid for it. And I was like, I don't know where that idea came from.
TMZ.
Because we do not have the money in local media to be paying people for that stuff.
No,
either.
if there was money in local media, many of us would be doing that.
Yes. Not paying for photos that we can.
Kristen Decker takes really good photographs. She would be parked somewhere just taking photographs of people.
Yeah, I would be.
And possibly making more money doing that.
Probably triple.
Oh, I'm sorry. So now that this is a thing, because we always knew that you could have kind of parody.
Yeah, like The Onion.
Yes.
The Onion is known to be a satirical news source.
I was always interested when I would sit in on show prep meetings with people not at this radio station who would bring in these stories and go, this is so unbelievable.
It probably is.
And it was
is.
From The Onion.
It's
and I'm
not
like,
real.
This isn't a real news site. And they're like, no, I read it. It was on the internet. This is when the internet was, well, it has to be real. And I was like, no, it's The Onion. And then there were more sites and more sites. And now we have like Funny or Die and things. Those are places we know are joking.
Yes.
However.
Now the fake news is imitating the real news. That's the problem.
Well.
And people are not, the average viewer, reader, listener is not.
Savvy.
Yeah. To figure out what is fake. And what is real. I have a personal experience. My grandfather shares almost everything he shares on his Facebook page is fake news. It drives me crazy. I tell him and he's like, I don't know. Is it?
I think it started where I first started seeing it heavily was in the emails.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People forwarding.
You would get these forwarded stories. And I can say this because I don't think my mom knows I'm on the air right now. My mom was terrible with it. She was like, can you believe that this such and such happened to this poor police officer? And I was immediately on Snopes because Snopes was the first place for us to go.
Can you imagine the people at Snopes in this past year? Goodness. I hope they got...
Snopes.com, if you don't know Snopes, which is S-N-O-P-E-S, Snopes.com, it has been around for a very long time. The way I was introduced to it was 18 years ago, likely, 16, 17 years ago, when I was working at a different radio station and forwarded something, and my friend sent me the Snopes article back that was like, no, this is completely fake.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot die because of rat urine on the top of your soda can.
Oh,
right?
I always had the fear that I'd be walking down Michigan Avenue and a penny would fall and, you know, kill me because I, you know, until I learned about Snopes.
A lot of urban myths.
Yeah.
They hit that speed and that's as fast as they can go. Snopes is wonderful and Snopes is a great place for you to go if you see something and you're a little bit unsure.
Yeah.
However, we're almost in the point where we need to train. I actually talked to a journalism professor about this very similar topic about a week or two ago. We almost have to train the viewer, the consumers of news that we are producing, be it radio, television, in print, to vet it themselves.
Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate because it takes a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found a guide that actually kind of walks people through that. And it's been since, I would say, October, I feel like they've been working on this. Journalism professors, industry people. It's like a Google Doc that all these industry people have been working on to put together what are fake news sources, how to identify them. I brought some of that information to talk about. But I have to first say, I walked into Tribune Tower and I was standing in the lobby. And I was thinking about this a week ago, I think. I've only been in Chicago last week.
Yeah.
But I was listening to Amy Guth and she was talking about this too. The lobby of Tribune Tower is just when you read the quotes, it almost makes you sad when you think about fake news. Like, I was thinking one of the quotes in there is that the newspaper is to inform and lead the public opinion. But in 2016, 2017, I mean, I hope it does.
It's
but...
almost to defend what is real. That's what I feel like the news sources are doing now.
We're trying to defend ourselves when we,
It's like, no, we've actually put forth effort. This is real. And everybody goes, yeah, but no, because I saw a news, quote unquote, news site that told me what I wanted to believe.
Yes.
And that's where it's frustrating, is that with our parents, with our grandparents, with our coworkers, with our friends, and now with our children, we have to explain that what they read isn't necessarily true. And it's harder to figure out whether it is or isn't. Mm-hmm. And now even when you go to source a story, when you try to, because it's always, what, three sources?
Yeah, that's what we try to do. That's what I'm taught in school.
So you go with three sources. But now you can find three sources that support fake news.
Yeah.
Because so many people pick it up and run with it and forward it. And you're like, well, it was on these sites. I actually put out a story that I was like, wow, this is a crazy story. And it was on Huffington Post. And I went, well, it's Huffington Post. Mm-hmm. It was not real.
Yeah.
It was not. And Huffington Post pulled it down about 5 minutes later because it was written by like one of their contributors.
Yeah. That's talked about in this list of things to look out for. BuzzFeed, mm-hmm. Huffington Post, any of the places that have the community can contribute, those are places of caution.
Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGiglio. He'll be back with you tomorrow at 2 a.m., which feels like later today. I get very confused.
I'm confused, but when I was listening to you on the drive-in, and I just woke up, so I'm confused by you keep saying yesterday.
It's
New
yesterday
Year's,
and,
New Year's
and
Eve.
Today, and it's Monday, but I left on Sunday. It's all... I feel like I flew across time zones when I do this shift. Michael Guerin, the voice you hear with me, news producer, television news producer, former intern with our fine friends over at WGN Television News, and interestingly, journalism student. And you've been doing this since you were in middle school, political news reporting, and then news reporting, and then working in journalism. But you're going to get learned real good at the university level, where you're learning about journalism and the journalistic principles and how you do this. What we're learning as a collective society, though, is that we all have to be journalists and we all have to source stories and vet things. And this is not, it's not you and I talking about
no.
it. Really high level people have been putting together sort of a
guide,
choose your own adventure guide, yes, on how to source your news.
Yeah, I found this, and I think this was shared a lot within the journalism industry. I saw over the past few months of different people from universities and professional news outlets working on this Google Doc to basically kind of be a guide to identify what is fake news. And it's called The False, Misleading, Clickbaity, and Satirical News Sources.
Clickbaity. Love it.
Yes. So some of their tips that they give, and this is all Creative Commons, so we can share it. And I know Hannah might post it on your Facebook page.
I'm doing it right now.
Anyone can get that. But you kind of want to avoid websites that end in low. It's like news low. What they do is they take accurate...
Like L-O-W?
L-O.
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 Okay.
Yeah, what they do is they take accurate information and package them with other false and misleading facts. So this is a lot of satirical places, but this is something that they have found a lot. Another is websites that end in .com, .co. So you could take...
Like O.co, where you can get overstock stuff.
So it would be like CNN.com.co.
Oh,
so what they're doing is they're piggybacking on a real news source.
I was seeing a lot from ABC.news.
Yes, there's something with ABC. I noticed that, and it looked pretty similar to their website.
It really, they might as well have just stolen screenshots.
Yeah.
But it was all fake.
If there's a lack of an author... sometimes can signify that the story needs more verification.
Okay.
What we talked about earlier, any news organization letting bloggers post under brands, BuzzFeed, Forbes blogs, Huffington Post, they're not always vetted before they go live.
And that's, so bloggers can submit stories, which turns into me posting something I think is real because it was on Huffington Post, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So then I deleted it. Because that's a thing, by the way. If you realize, this is something I need people to know. If you post something on Facebook or Twitter and then you realize it's wrong, delete it. Mm-hmm. Maybe post something that said, by the way, wrong.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I'm deleting this.
Yes.
Because it doesn't need to be out there anymore.
No. And another one that they give out is watch out if known and reputable news sites and news sources are not reporting on this story. So if it's a Chicago story and you're not hearing, even though we're hearing the mainstream media is not covering certain things, odds are they are covering it. As someone who works for a big media group.
Yes.
I don't see that ever happening. I don't see corporate influence or anything like that.
No. And what is interesting to me is and Johnny Olasinski and I were talking about this earlier. You feel like you're in a race to scoop everybody. Like, I saw this article first, and if I post it first, then everybody will think I do it. That's not really how it works. That's how it works with us.
Yes.
We want to be the station that broadcasts it first or has the better interview.
Yes.
Or the better camera angle on
but
the story.
But they verify.
But it's verified. I mean, you can be dispatching a crew to go cover a story, but you're working the phones to make sure it's a real story before they even get there.
Yes.
So that is something, if you can take a few extra minutes and go to legitimate news sites. If it is a Chicago-based story, go to the Chicago Tribune, go to the Chicago Sun-Times. The websites or the apps even, because those apps are going to take you to their site.
Yeah,
you're not going to mistype something with the apps. That's why the apps are solid. But then the ABCs, CBS, NBC, and of course, WGN.
WGN is a good source to go to. Yeah, I mean, when I worked at, or when I interned rather at WGN TV, I mean, the amount of
work
work that went in to verify things and then to make sure the whole newsroom knew what was verified was really impressive. And that's what's done in local media in Chicago. And that's why they can be trusted as opposed to blogs. And there are some reputable blogs. But you've got to be really careful. I always say go trust the news sources within the city.
Here's the thing. Many blogs are current blogs are being put out by former journalists, people who worked for newspapers and were laid off. And so that's their outlet. They're still putting out news and their opinion, but things that they're researching. Those are the people you can trust, but boy, is it getting harder and harder to find them.
Yeah. So I was telling Hannah during news about, or during traffic rather, about my grandfather's Facebook feed.
Yeah, let's hear him.
So I was going to read some of the headlines. I can immediately tell this is fake
news. This is the grandfather of a journalist, of a news producer.
And I was saying he is, you know, he's an intelligent person. He's a smart listener. He listens to WGN. I believe that the listeners of WGN are fairly intelligent people.
So do we. Yes, thank you.
And so these are some of them. Donald Trump just insulted to the United Nations, and their response is perfect. Anytime you hear their response is perfect, or I heard you say earlier, number eight
will blow your mind.
Yeah. That it's wrong.
That's fake.
Or just in, Prince Charles issues severe warning about Donald Trump. This is terrifying.
Anything that has sort of an opinion at the end of the headline.
Yeah. Oh, that's for
fake.
Sure fake.
Okay.
So now Facebook is working to address this. Because I think in 2016, the biggest place fake news really was
Facebook.
And right after the election, there was allegations and Mark Zuckerberg said, nope, Facebook was not an issue. But then a week later, Facebook comes out with a plan. So some of the things they're going to be doing is they're making a way for regular people to report news things as a hoax, fake news as a hoax.
That's going to be, they're going to have to hire thousands of people to handle this.
Well, because then there's third-party fact checkers they're going to have, and every story that they identify as fake will be flagged. So they'll be below the article. It will have like a little orange icon. It will say disputed by a third-party fact checker.
But they're not getting rid of it.
No, they're keeping it there, but they're making it. And then when you share it, there's another pop-up that says, before you share this story, you might want to know that independent fact-checkers have disputed its accuracy. So there's a lot of different ways that they're working on addressing the issue. When it's going to come out, it hasn't come out yet. But I was talking about that with the people I work with at the TV station I work at, is there's concerns of everything we post could be disputed. I'm in an area that's really heavily focused in the Dakota Access Pipeline. What was the protest there?
Right.
They've kind of dissolved a little bit. But everything we posted was
not in Minneapolis.
Yeah, we saw that. Everything that we posted about it was disputed in the comments that we were not getting the right information. A lot of protesters thought that the information we were putting out was not fair. We're afraid that a situation like this would all of a sudden get flagged and we're a reputable news source and it's, you know.
Okay, so what they were saying wasn't fair was because they viewed it as biased.
Yes, because what they see is what I learned a lot was that the protesters wanted no sources that were coming from law enforcement or officials, which is where we get a lot of our information.
That's a legitimate news source.
Yeah. And they're going with what's being said by, like, Democracy Now!, which is a nonprofit, left-leaning news source. So it was kind of an interesting situation.
Stanley filling in tonight.
Hey, Kristen.
Nick DiGilio. I'm sitting here in the Allstate Showcase studio. We're reading your texts and answering your calls. 312-981-7200 is the number for both. It is the text line, and I've been reading those as well. Hey, we've been talking also all show about songs that motivate you, songs that pull you out of kind of your theme song. That's another way to look at it.
Hey, Kristen.
Hey, Michael Guerin, do you have a theme song?
You know, okay, so you asked me this earlier. I don't, but I've been thinking about it. Hamilton is something we talked about.
Yeah.
I'm going to see it finally, thank goodness.
Me too.
I got limited view seating with a pole probably in front of me, but I don't care. I'm so excited.
I've got Cubs games with limited view. Yeah. It's obstructive. I bet it's not as bad as at Wrigley.
Yeah, probably not. And so anything from Hamilton, but there's a couple songs there that are pretty good that I like. Any Hamilton song.
My Shot.
I like My Shot.
Not going to miss My Shot.
Yeah. I like I really like the Skylar Sisters song.
That's great. That's a good one.
Yeah, no, I think that's...
Phillipa Sue, we talked about her earlier.
I know.
She sang on that.
That's so... I mean, yeah, she's in the original recording. Yeah, anything from... and I really like the I'll Be Back song.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
I find that there's a lot of humor in that about the British and America. If you haven't listened to that soundtrack, it is well worth it.
Well, it's very interesting, too, because Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote Hamilton,
yeah,
took him 7 years. If you don't know what we're talking about, I don't know.
Where
have you been? This is a real story that we are discussing is Hamilton and really a fascinating PBS documentary.
Oh, that was so
good. Hamilton's America.
Yes.
And it's done well enough that it will play for years and years. It's really well done. And Hamilton is playing here in Chicago and is about to open in San Francisco, I believe.
Good luck getting tickets in Chicago, as I learned.
Well, I know. I'm going in May.
Yeah.
And it's been open. I mean, it'll be a long time it will have been opened by the time you're seeing it.
That is great news, though.
It's great
to have that.
It's very good. And in the words of Lin-Manuel Miranda, it is not often that a musical or a play leaves the theater section mm-hmm. of a newspaper and becomes pop culture. And so this is fantastic. He also produced and did the music for Moana, which is Disney's newest and really, really powerful messaging. Uh-huh. But it's very fascinating how evolved the music is and how similar it is. You can definitely tell it's the same voice.
Yeah.
So, and there is actually a song from Moana that has made my list of things to kind of motivate me. And it's Moana is very much about finding your own path and establishing where you are, which is one of the songs.
Uh-huh.
And her parents are like, nope, you're safe here. You're good. This is where you need to be. This is where you are. These are your people.
Yeah.
You will lead us. And she was like, but I want to go do this. I want to go out of the ocean. And it's really interesting to see her kind of find her destiny and carve her own way and then realize she can still be her.
Last time I was with you, you had another Disney song as your motivation. It was a Disney short that played before. I don't remember. It before Frozen? Maybe it was with the volcanoes.
Oh my God! Yes,
I remember you talking about that was your motivational song. I'm sensing a theme.
I have kids, so yeah. There's always a Disney.
I went and watched it. I couldn't get out of my head after I talked to
you. It's the best. I have it on my phone. We'll listen to it in a few minutes. we'll listen to it during the break. Yes, it's really, really good. The volcanoes love each other.
Yes, that was it.
It will make you cry.
It was
about a volcano.
It was pretty good.
Those people are gifted. They're so talented. So as we were talking about with you, Michael Guerin, let's give a little bit of your credentials. You have been a full-on political reporter since you were in middle school, which I love. But here's what's great about that is you go into it zero jaded. You yeah. have no idea that politicians lie and this some of this is fake. And you just go in kind of bright-eyed and like, yay, gung-ho, RNC.
Yeah.
You're at the Republican National Convention reporting on this. Then you continue your path through high school, college. Now you are a television news producer. You interned with the fine people at WGN Television over by there. Bradley Place,
yes.
for those familiar. But what I've been a really big observer of the fake news movement.
Yeah.
As if it's organized. It's not. But people are realizing they can make money this way because of advertising on their website. This is where Facebook, who is sort of leading the charge, much too late in my opinion.
Yeah.
But they are really fessing up to the fact that they played a part in this.
Yeah, and
allowing it.
We should also probably say, I mean, I think a lot of this came to light after the election. Just a few weeks ago, I think Hillary Clinton even brought it up during a speech, one of her three post-election speeches.
Yeah.
But it's not a conservative liberal thing. It's both. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, the headlines I was reading the last half hour mm-hmm. were against conservatives. They were liberal headlines. So it is not something I think that's being misconstrued. I don't think it's just pro Donald Trump. It is
a fake news story if you think it is just one party or t'other.
Yeah.
It's not even the parties or the viewpoints. It is everybody. Yeah. And what is easy is to find stories that make you feel warm and cozy and agree with your viewpoints. It is harder to find challenge and think through the issues of an unbiased position. You were speaking earlier about the protests that were happening along the pipeline.
Yes.
In North Dakota.
North Dakota.
And that is still, while those protests have diminished and they've stopped what they were doing, mm-hmm. the protests really haven't stopped because we saw that in Minneapolis where why is it that the do-gooders, the people who have to have their voice, they're always so good with the climbing equipment?
I don't know.
These people know a carabiner. They know what to do.
There's been two incidents in the last, 48 hours. There was that, and then this was a totally different situation.
Oh, the Hollywood sign?
The Hollywood sign. How is everyone climbing these places? I can't think of climbing U.S. Bank Stadium, and I can't think of climbing the Hollywood sign.
Well, I've not been to the Hollywood sign. I believe you can hike there.
Can you? Okay.
Yeah, that's a hikeable location.
Someone else told me that Mount Rushmore, which I was just at again recently, that someone won shortly after 9/11, they put a flag over it. I was thinking, how do you get up there? I don't know. I feel like
there's probably still some equipment from when they were actually doing.
They never finished Mount Rushmore. Do you ever know that?
I didn't know that.
That is not how it's supposed to look.
How is it supposed to look?
Are they going to go much more to the torso?
I think I did know that.
Yeah, the war stopped it
because they all had to go and fight.
Yeah, and they felt like it wasn't good to be working on a national monument during a war, and it never got finished. But I don't think I could never see it being finished now. I mean, I don't think it will never, but I'm saying I see it how it is right now.
Is Crazy Horse finished?
No. Crazy Horse will probably go on for a long time.
Okay, but they're still working on it.
They're still working on it, yeah.
And that's in South Dakota.
That is in South Dakota. They the first generation of the family that was working on it has now all passed away. Mm-hmm. Last year, I think the wife passed away. And so now the kids are taking over the project. It's still happening. I think it's impressive to go and see it because it's almost, you can go to Crazy Horse and see if you're, not that I'm speaking for South Dakota tourism, but you can go there and see what it's like to blast a mountain like they did with Mount Rushmore, and then go see Mount Rushmore, which is just
like
amazing.
Before, during, and after.
Yeah.
Really, really fascinating. Here is my question for you as we head into a period of time where people are far more aware of the fact that fake news is a thing, that they should likely start questioning more than they do. And I'm telling you, it's not as easy as just flipping through Facebook and reading stories.
No.
That's easy. That doesn't take any brain power. You can do it half asleep. That's how I do it a lot. However, when you take the time to actually vet it or focus exclusively on news sources, that's a challenge. That's one of the things people are now more aware of. We're heading into an election or into an inauguration based on the most contentious election it feels like. I feel like there were more contentious elections, but we didn't have everybody's opinion. Nobody got to say anything.
I don't know. I felt like I slept for a week after this election, after hearing everyone, and, you know.
It was very angry.
It was very angry. And, you know, this, I have no idea. I was telling you, it is so hard. As we all learned, I think, in this industry, you can't predict the future. Because I think many people in this industry had an idea walking into election day who was going to win. And we were blown away. The campaigns had an idea of who was going to win on election day. I don't think that
Trump thought he was going to win.
Yeah, but I think that his campaign did.
Hillary knew she was going to win.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. It's so hard to predict the future. So to think about what is going to happen until the inauguration, then after the inauguration, I don't know. I'm kind of dumbfounded at this point. I know that many leading news organizations, the Associated Press, one of them, is staffing up their White House coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Just out of
before the new administration or
yeah,
for
the new
okay
for the new administration
okay
just
because they need fact checkers
that and I think that there's been just some already contention of having a press pool travel with the president-elect and things like that they want to make sure they're covering
so they can if they can't travel with him they can at least be staffed wherever
they can figure
he
that out.
Might be it really is going to be interesting. We had a texter post that it's very interesting when the president-elect is saying things that might be fake.
Yeah, I think that when he tweets things sometimes that but it becomes a story then you can't I
so
us
then,
in the media can't ignore that the president-elect is tweeting something.
But we,
if it's not true, but they rebut it, I think is what I've seen a lot, is they take and they rebut it. But when you have, you know, who will be shortly the leader of the free world saying certain things, they have to be fact checked, obviously.
Maybe we just don't say that he posted something that was a little wacky.
But people can look it up on their own. That's the
Then
they can go to his
okay.
Twitter account on their own.
Then that is okay.
Yeah.
But if it's not factual news, I don't think we should.
Yeah.
Let's skip the next segment and just listen to the song. Brass Monkey. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. Listening to a little Beastie Boys. We are closing out our songs that get us moving. That would definitely be one of them. This is why I asked these questions, because that's a song that I would have heard it and been like, oh, that's right. But I might not hear it for a year. So thank you, Kristen Decker. I'm writing that on my list. That funky monkey, brass monkey. Michael Guerin joining me. Television news producer, political junkie, follower, reporter, journalist, former intern at WGN Television, where we train all of our people to be excellent. And all around great guy. But also journalism student, which is very interesting.
Still a student.
Still
of
a
journalism.
Student.
Although I think anyone is still a student. We're all learning every day.
Well, especially now.
Right now, yeah.
Because this is something that is constantly evolving, which is fake news.
Yes.
And how even we, I was a journalism major in college. I wrote for a paper. I've been at news stations for many, many years. I can even get sucked in. I am so good about vetting things before I forward them. And I pushed a story and I read it.
Yeah.
I even read it. And I was like, wow. It doesn't seem real, but it was on Huffington Post. It seemed legit.
Yeah, until you find out that
and
those places.
And it wasn't.
Yeah. Anyone can contribute to those places, which is why they get sucked.
And
with, you know.
And they figured it out fast and yanked it, and then I deleted it.
Yeah.
If you do not know how to delete stories someone posted, I only post things that are legit because I don't know how to delete it. There's multiple ways you can Google how to delete a tweet or a story. But basically, in the upper right-hand corner on Facebook, you can do a little click-down arrow, and it'll ask, and you can say
delete.
Delete.
Yeah. So we were talking about fake news, but I was thinking a lot of some people listening might not realize that the different types of fake news. There's like
we talked about kind of the parody satire, yes, like the Onion, yes, that type
and
of thing.
And but that people, I feel like, no, that's fake news. When you click on an Onion story, it's not real. But yeah, there's the fake news. Those are obviously stories that are completely fabricated. There's the satire. There's extreme bias. That's another, you know, type of fake news. And you can get that. You can get that on Huffington Post or Fox News or certain, you know, on the, in their opinion sections.
Right, right.
Conspiracy theory, rumor mill, state news. So that's coming from, you know, state governments. U.S. doesn't obviously have this issue, but there are many government run news organizations. Russia has that.
Sure.
Obviously North Korea has that.
Right, right. North Korea. Okay, yeah.
Junk science, hate news, clickbait, which is what we all know. The number 8 will shock you.
It is the worst. Yep. Yes. Number 8 will shock you.
Yeah. And then there's also just political news sources. You can have a political campaign can put out news sources. The Clinton campaign, for example, had what they were saying they were fact checking things. Was it really totally unbiased? I wouldn't trust a campaign for fact checking. I would go straight to.
There would be no reason for them to be unbiased. They have a reason to be biased.
Yes, they do.
They're
so,
on payroll.
So to think that that is a accurate fact checking source is kind of another thing that.
So when we were all watching the debates and several stations or websites would be fact checking the debates as we went along, depended on the websites you were checking.
It did. Well, it's hard to do that. I mean, it is hard to fact check in real time like that. I thought NPR did a really good job at that. The Washington Post and then the Associated Press did really good at that. A lot of people were, you know, I saw a lot of comments saying, why is the moderator not fact checking? But that's not, historically, that hasn't been their job.
Mm-hmm.
Will that change moving forward in the future? I don't know. But
I don't know how that would even be possible.
No, they would have to have a team to fact check and tell them what they're. But they're up there solo. They got no. The only thing I'm guessing they get is time cues, and that's it.
Time cues would definitely be something that they would have to have.
Yeah, because but that's it. I don't think they get any other.
They're not sitting there
guidance.
With a stopwatch going. It's your 2 minutes is up. there was so much of a. Need to be sort of the ringmaster of these debates. Everybody was going over their time. Everybody was talking over everybody else. They were not answering any of the questions that were actually being asked, which is always happens.
Yes,
always spun the way they want it to be spun. But it really, I don't know how it would the moderator is so busy trying to figure out if the politician ever even answered the question that was originally asked.
Yeah.
They can't fact check.
No. And then it's up to each of those news organizations afterward. A lot of them seem to fact check when they were breaking down what just happened in the debate. But in real time, that would be interesting. And do people stay watching to watch that? I don't know.
Well, right. And the thing that I feel is so incredibly important for news organizations, and as we sit in one of them,
yes,
it is that the retractions never carry as much weight as the fake story.
No, they don't. Although, you know, so the news organization that I work at, we had to do a retraction. We decided to take it as we are going to do it, and this was a leading story that there was an error in. And we decided the next day we would put it in the same part of the show. And in news, the A block, which is the beginning of the show, is a very important time.
Mm-hmm.
We put it in the beginning of the show, on air, referenced it. That is quite a, you know, there's not a lot of places that do that.
Not a lot of places that do that. Usually it's buried.
Yeah.
I mean, if typically what we do see, and I do applaud when this happens, if a newscaster has said something inappropriate or needs to apologize, they do that, and that's okay. That's usually, it is more of a feature when they're doing that. However, if they go, oh, by the way, we were so wrong, that's usually buried somewhere else.
It is normally buried.
So it really falls to us as consumers of news, and then you and I as we're not producers of news, but mm-hmm. we are the people who push the news and bring it to others. We have to maintain our standards. And like I said earlier, and I understand it's almost impossible to not report on what is being tweeted about.
Yeah.
But 10 years ago, this wasn't even a thing that existed. We really have to analyze whether the how important is it? If people want to read his tweets, they can read his tweets.
Yeah. I think the most important, I think a lot of people just need to understand that both of us work for big news organizations, major news organizations. I believe this one is number one local. But there's no corporate influence. We're not told what to say. The news organizations operate independently from their corporate organizations. There's no swaying. That's not something I think that has been brought up a lot. I noticed this a lot with my station's coverage of Dakota Access Pipeline, that they were in, you know, they were paying us off to, you know, that was not happening. I can tell you for sure that never happened.
Oh, please, people, we don't make a lot of money.
We don't make a lot of money. That is an accurate statement.
This is not something we're getting paid off for, trust me. It really would, oh boy. You know what? Has it happened? Probably.
Oh, yeah. But it's very rare.
It's not happening.
I think most people in this industry are working to share the truth. That's why we're in it. We're not in it for the money.
And I'm glad you mentioned the lobby and the elevator banks here at Tribune Tower. These are quotes about journalism that are timeless.
Yes.
And really, if you happen to be downtown Chicago, if you're on Michigan Avenue and you happen to see the beautiful facade that is the Tribune Tower, the lobby is open to the public. Please come in and take pictures and read the quotes. And this is what we strive for.
And I can imagine anyone that I've ever worked with, I said I worked upstairs at the MASH, that's the people at WGN Radio.
Yeah.
I think anyone who works in this building takes everything that's inscribed on those walls pretty seriously.
Absolutely. I'm about to be hugged and kissed by Pete McMurray. And Jane Manzur has walked in. She's blowing me kisses across the studio. Michael Guerin, thank you for your time here, and boy, I look forward to all of the stories that you push out. I did post that article a cheat sheet.
It's a guide. Identifying fake news, figuring out, you know, if you're on a news source and it doesn't seem real, you should look at that guide.
Check the guide.